I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. If you're thinking about it, chances are we're talking about it on WHYY's Radio Times.
Support for this public radio podcast comes from Vanguard, offering investments designed to help individuals and institutions reach their long-term financial goals. 1-888-VANGUARD.
Pigeons have played an important role in a number of wars. It's estimated that a million pigeons served in both World War I and World War II and saved thousands of lives by carrying important messages to military leaders. Julius Reuters relied on pigeons to help build his newspaper organization. Pigeon droppings used to be valued for centuries. They were considered property of the British Crown. Pigeon races have a long and venerable history. Pigeons can fly for hundreds of miles at 60 miles an hour. One was clocked at 110. But in spite of all this good press, pigeons are generally viewed these days as a nuisance, a disease-carrying menace, disparagingly called rats of the sky. How did these birds go from friend to foe? Andrew Bleckman decided to explore the ambivalence about these birds. He interviewed pigeon lovers and detractors in the U.S. and Europe for his new book, and it's called Pigeons, The Fascinating Saga of the World's Most Revered and Reviled Bird. Nice to have you with us on Radio Times. Good morning.
It's good to be here.
I had to be talked into doing this book, I have to tell you, and I enjoyed what I learned and how you wrote, so I appreciate you joining us this morning on Radio Times. But let's talk about the reviled part of pigeon, these rats of the sky. Why are they viewed with such disgust these days?
Well, you know, it's interesting. For 10,000 years, they have been our best friends, and it's only in the last 50 years or so they've begun to be reviled, and now they're becoming more and more reviled. And the only thing I can really link it to is the rise of the pest control industry, and they put tens of millions of dollars into portraying this bird as a vermin. The reality is, first of all, the bird is only filthy because it's in our cities. Our cities are filthy. We're filthy. Secondly, it's no more disease-ridden than we are, and in fact, it seems to be partially immune or totally immune to avian flu and West Nile virus.
So in spite of all these positives, this enduring feeling remains. I mean, I wonder if it isn't due in part to the 25 pounds of pigeon droppings
every year, for every bird. Let me first say this. I mean, wildlife is inconvenient, you know, but it animates our lives. Like, I have a two-year-old. Raising her is inconvenient, but she utterly animates my life, and it's the best thing I've ever done. Mm-hmm. It's the same thing with wildlife, I think. Secondly, there are too many pigeons, and the only thing what we could do is a form of humane control, which is what they do in Europe. They do it in Germany, Switzerland, and the Benelux nations, and it works very well. Within a year or two, they actually have the population.
How does that work?
Well, it's actually pretty simple, but we haven't even touched upon it in this country. And what it is basically you have like a pigeon coop, or it looks like a hen house, right? You can have someone design it, you can have a competition. You put it in a city park. You encourage people to feed the birds only there.
Around the pigeon coop.
Or inside it, really, putting it through. And that's it. Because the more you feed, the more they breed. And the more they breed, the more trouble you have. What you do at the end of the week, then, is you cull the eggs so that they're not reproducing quite the same way. And if you can have it by 50%, really, most of the problems do go away.
And it does corral, I guess, the pigeons to certain parts of a community, then.
It does to a certain extent, but they're still in public places, and you'll still see them around, and it's actually a very safe place for them. It's a rough life out there for a bird.
But, feeding pigeons is something people do. They go to Trafalgar Square. They go to certain parks, and it's a tradition. Think of Rome and the parks there where people go and feed the pigeons.
You know, they actually did that in ancient Rome as well. Ancient Rome was filled with pigeons all over the ledges of the different of the different monuments there. Yeah, feeding the pigeons is fun. Let's face it. I even enjoy it, and I'm not – let me make this very clear. I'm not a bird person. I'm not a pigeon person. I tripped across this story, and I'm not an advocate. But the more I learned about this bird, the more amazed I was by it and come to admire it. I don't even have binoculars.
Who called them, though, rats of the sky? Where did that come
from? Well, rats with wings. That was Woody Allen. That was in Stardust Memories, and it stuck, no doubt about it. But the interesting, you get a lot of people that are afraid of them. And first of all, you'll never meet an aggressive pigeon, ever. There's no Monty Python killer pigeon out there. They're extremely docile and gentle. They like us.
In fact, they're very social creatures.
Gregarious, you might say, yeah. Very, very gentle with each other. In fact, they mate for life. And it's interesting, the mothers and fathers, they share parenting duties, and they sit on the nest equal amounts of time over the eggs.
We could learn a thing from our fellow pigeons.
Yeah, they kiss a lot, too.
Well, let's go back. When do you see the first signs that there were pigeons in the world?
Oh, well, it goes way back, even well into prehistory before there's any recordings of it. But ancient Egypt was using them. The pharaohs would use them to send messages up and down the Nile about flood levels because, you know, the flood, the Nile routinely floods. Then it was used to bring news of the Olympics, of the very first Olympics in 776 BC, back home to the villages in Greece. Interestingly, 2,500 years later, it was pigeons who brought news of Napoleon's defeat at Waterloo back to England. It was an interesting story, actually. It was Baron Rothschild who hired a courier to bring a pigeon out to Waterloo. And when Napoleon was defeated, it, you know, a message was tied to the bird's ankle and flew right back to Rothschild. He had tomorrow's news today. He had it 24 hours before any word had reached London. And he invested accordingly.
Well, invested accordingly.
Yeah.
And made a lot of money.
Yes.
Obviously beating horses or whatever other message of transmitting
Information's a commodity. And back then, what was, you know, until the telegraph, if you think about it, what was the fastest way to get anything anywhere? It was either at a horse trot or running. If you look at the ancient Greeks, when the Athenians defeat the Persians at Marathon, you have, you know, the famous runner, you know, which in the marathon's named after, 26.2 miles. Took him most of the day. And then he died.
Not so with a pigeon, right?
A pigeon would take him about 20 minutes.
About 20 minutes to go, 26 miles.
Yeah.
Talk a little bit about what is known, and it sounds like much is not known, about why they have these amazing homing abilities, this ability to not only fly fast, but get from point to know essentially where they're going.
I know.
And coming back.
It's just unbelievable. I mean, these birds will routinely fly 600-mile races at 60 miles an hour without stopping for food, water, or anything, without stopping to ask for directions. They'll come in like feathered, laser-guided missiles. It's just unbelievable, right from 600 miles away. I talked to the very top guys in the field. People have, you know, dedicated their lives to this. And I talked to one, in particular, I talked to one gentleman, Charlie Walcott, at Cornell in the ornithology school. He's probably the premier guy in the world on this. And the first thing he'll tell me is, or the first thing he told me was, we don't know for sure. Next thing he'll tell you is, well, it seems to be that they're able to sense the Earth's magnetic field, literally as if they have a compass inside their head that's spinning around.
Wow.
Yeah, so they're able to sense the bands and locate themselves that way. They're also, they use the sun and the stars. In fact, but interestingly, a blindfold pigeon will still find its way home. And they also have ultrasound hearing, which they can hear wind over the Rockies from 2,000 miles away, which also helps place themselves. It's really an uncanny ability.
You interviewed a guy, he's really a charming guy, who races pigeons. And I guess this was sort of the essential story that got you involved in pigeon. This is a guy named Orlando Martinez.
Yeah, Orlando.
And he's a New Yorker, right?
Yeah, he's as New York as you can get. He's a Puerto Rican immigrant, came here when he was about, I don't know, 6, 7, 8 years old. And a salt of the earth kind of guy, also a very funny guy. Yeah. You might call him a charmer, you might call him other things, but I certainly enjoyed hanging out with him. And he is a racer, and it was actually through him that I learned about this whole world of racing. But the interesting thing is, you'll have people like Orlando, you know, just your average guy, you know, salt of the earth in New York City, racing pigeons, but you also have the Queen of England, as well as her father and grandfather racing pigeons. So it spans all over.
Well, and you describe, and this is not a rich guy, he spends something like $4,000 a year on taking care of his pigeons.
You know, these guys are, I hesitate to use the word fanatic because it has connotations, but they're really, really driven. I met a guy in England who runs around his backyard with a whistle, and he's in gym clothes, whistling at his pigeons. I mean, it's almost like he has a soccer team. He brews them special chamomile teas and all sorts of things. Gives them a little bit of peppermint drops to clear up their nasal passages for their flights. I mean,
very competitive, though, right?
Very competitive. You know, there are races out there. You know, now, most of them are really just like Orlando, you know, a few $1,000 here or there, $100. There are races out there that have prizes for $1 million. And the bird that wins can be sold at auction for tens of thousands of dollars and then studded out for about $1,000 or $2,000 a session.
And for Orlando, what was the where were the races he was involved in? Was it around the New York area?
Yeah. I really wanted to get into, like, you know, that New York community, the rooftop community. But you know, it's funny. I actually went on one of the races. I went with the truck that liberates the birds. It was all the way out, like, in West Virginia, like out by Wheeling, coming all the way back to Brooklyn. And when they let those birds out, first it was a magnificent thing. All the birds are trucked out there, a place they've never been before, and they're all released at dawn together. And then I went race back, actually, with a Smithsonian photographer, and those birds beat us hands down by, like, a couple of hours.
And they got back to right where they started.
Yeah, we didn't have a lot of traffic either.
That tells you something. Now you said that one of these pigeons was clocked at 110 miles an hour. That's hard to believe.
Yeah, it is, right?
Test. This is a statewide required monthly test of the emergency alert system originating from the Pennsylvania Emergency Management Agency, Harrisburg. This is only a test.
More at a time, at speeds like you and me driving in fifth gear.
60 miles an hour?
Yeah, at least.
There's also one of his birds, this would be Orlando Martinez, one of his birds broke their wing.
Yeah, Marty.
Coming back and walked back. Now, tell the story. I don't want to steal your thunder here.
You know, it's everyone's got a story about their pigeon. And this one, it was just a marvel. Marty was his best bird. And it was there was a race. It wasn't a long one. It was a few hundred miles. I guess it was three. And Marty didn't come home. Marty and Orlando assumed it was a hawk had eaten Marty. And 2 weeks later, he looks out on his door stoop, and there's Marty with a broken wing, and she had walked home.
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, that almost brings tears to your eyes.
I know.
Think about that kind of thing.
Some of the stories about these birds, actually, I do get choked up, and I really surprise myself because I'm not a bird person. But, you know, the war hero ones in particular, just really saving our boys, you know, way back when, some of our grandfathers, really.
Well, and there were a couple of birds, Shir Ami. This was in one of the wars. Another one, G.I. Joe, got awards for...
You know, exactly.
Their efforts during the war.
Jeremy, and I'll tell actually his story. But after this was all done with Jeremy and the heroics, he actually got sent back to the United States in General Pershing's berth, in the ship. He was sent like first class and he received a hero's welcome.
Hmm.
Now it's a far cry from what we think about these days with pigeons. Now what he did was this: it's a very famous war story, and it was the Lost Battalion, which is a very famous story. It was World War One. That was the trench war, and they were in the Argonne Forest, deep in the forest, and they had broke through enemy's lines, and then they were surrounded by the enemy. And they were being decimated by the enemy. Maybe half of them were killed in a matter of hours. And then things got worse. Then the U.S. started barraging them with artillery, having no idea that they were there. Now, in warfare, pigeons were used always to send critical messaging. I mean, it goes all the way back to Julius Caesar sent messages back from Gaul to Rome and stuff, and Hannibal to Carthage. So anyway, they went to their birds. These birds would be taken in wicker baskets to the front. And to the trenches, and what they did is they tied the message to Jeremy. He flew up, was shot down, but before he reached the ground, he then rose again and he delivered the message. And he arrived with missing a part of his breast, part of his cranium, and the message was hanging from tendons on his legs.
I'll tell you what, we're going to take a very short break, and then we'll get back to our guests, and we're talking about pigeons today on Radio Time. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Kimmel Center Presents supports WHYY. Philodanko, the modern dance group, returns to the Kimmel Center November 16th to 19th. Dances include the world premiere of The Foul by Robert Moses and the company premiere of Dance for Six, choreographed by Joyce Trisler. Plus, Enemy Behind the Gates and the Philadelphia premiere of Ronald K. Brown's For Truth. Kimmel Center Presents hosts Philodanko, November 16th to 19th. Tickets at 215-893-1999 or kimmelcenter.org.
When you're around the table with friends and family, you never know what you're going to learn.
You know, there's an old Italian saying, tavola e letto non porta rispetto, meaning the table and the bed requires no restrictions.
That's Lydia Bastianich talking about life, family, and food. Join me, Carrie Nolan, for a fun and revealing conversation.
Saturday morning, November 25th at 11 o'clock on WHYY.
Next time on Day to Day. What's bugging Adam Sweeting's bees?
Maybe it's Adam.
Oh, just got stung.
Are you all right?
It's not going really well.
Oh, no?
He's got a lot of bees on him, but he's calmly walking away from the hive.
Adam and other New England beekeepers are in a bad mood, too. Honey production is down dramatically.
Find out why, plus all the latest buzz.
Next time on Day to Day.
This afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoe. Andrew Bleckman is our guest today on the show. We're talking about his new book. It's called Pigeons, the fascinating saga of the world's most revered and reviled bird. And he's been telling us stories of pigeon heroics during World War I and World War II. Also talking about some of these extraordinary birds who have raced and struggled on their way home. But there is the reviled part of pigeons as well. Let me play a song. I'm sure that everyone's very familiar with. This is Tom Lehrer poisoning pigeons in the park and part of his acerbic humor. Let's listen.
Spring is here, a suffering is here. Life is skittles and life is beer. I think the loveliest time of the year is the spring. I do, don't you? Of course you do. But there's one thing that makes spring complete for me and makes every Sunday a treat for me. All the world seems in tune on a spring afternoon when we're poisoning pigeons in the park. Every Sunday you'll see my sweetheart and me as we poison the pigeons in the park. When they see us coming, the birdies all try and hide. But they still go for peanuts when coated with cyanide. The sun's shining bright, everything seems all right when we're poisoning pigeons in the park.
I don't know if that's nervous laughter in the audience or not, but that, of course, none other than Tom Lehrer and Poisoning Pigeons in the Park. Lines open at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Well, let's make a segue to the Haggis Labor Day pigeon shoot, and this is here in Pennsylvania, or was here in Pennsylvania. You wanted to explore pigeons from all various angles, and this is a tradition in this town. I wonder if you could talk about
that. Yeah, actually, I couldn't think of a better segue than just this. After Sharon Mee, who literally arrived with a message hanging from tendons and then brought to the artillery commander, who then stopped barraging our boys. Yeah, Higgins was just a god-awful thing. This is where hate takes us. Hate always comes to its a conclusion of sorts, and this is where hate takes us, let alone indifference. Mm-hmm. Now, you know, we think it's funny to laugh at the pigeon. We think it's funny. Some people think it's funny to kick them or whatever. Well, in Higgins, they would shoot them. Actually, they slaughtered them, thousands of them in a morning, and they called it competition. Instead of using clay pigeons, which were actually developed at the turn of the century to replace live pigeons because it was thought inhumane, they use live pigeons.
Mm. In fact, don't they go and have people that essentially capture,
poach them off the streets of the city. Yeah, a lot of times in New York City, sometimes I imagine Philadelphia as well, they're stolen from the city, but it's not really a crime, right? Nor is shooting them a crime like this. I went and I participated in one. It was the only way I could get in, but I'm a lousy shot anyway. But it was Higgins in particular became the rallying cry of animal activists all around the world. And I'm not an animal activist, although I love animals, but it was shut down eventually by the Supreme Court, but because it was on public property. But it still happens in gun clubs. Mm. In this state in particular, Pennsylvania in particular, these shoots go on frequently.
Well, and what's most disturbing, and I would say your descriptions of what you observed and what you did was quite chilling, is the number of wounded birds that just die an agonizing death.
Yeah, it's literally a killing field. I mean, just imagine. I mean, some people might like this vision, but it didn't do much for me. Just imagine a field filled with thousands of dead and dying birds, or even just badly wounded birds, and they're left there to die. These are not birds that are then eaten. It's not like dove hunting, which is, you know, considered a legitimate sport. Mm-hmm. They're just left. Or actually, a lot of them are collected and are thrown into plastic garbage bags where they are then suffocated with their other brethren. And then they're then burned in canisters or sent out to rendering facilities.
Mm. What was it like for you to shoot? As you say, you're not a good shot. You're not a typical gunsman, marksman. But
no.
At the same time, there you were shooting at pigeons.
Yeah, you know what? And the weirdest thing I have to tell you is this. It was a chilling thing. I mean, going there, it was very hard to get into this thing. And they watched me. The worst part was my license plates were from Massachusetts. So they started like ribbing me about Ted Kennedy. And I say ribbing, but it was more than ribbing. They were very angry that I was from Massachusetts. So I went there. It was nerve-wracking. And then when I actually had the gun in my hands, I was nervous. But then the weird thing was, I actually enjoyed the sport a small amount when I was doing it. The competitive thing came out in me. It's you know, I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's a gun or shooting at something live or whatever. But right after it was over, I looked around at the birds. I was walking back to my car, and I was just utterly nauseated, particularly at myself.
And these were the half-dead birds that were lying on the ground.
Wings askew, blood coming out of their mouths. I mean, it's just this is why, like, picking on pigeons just isn't funny. Mm-hmm. I mean, by the way, people don't realize what pigeons are. Let me briefly explain. Pigeons are just doves, all right? Doves, pigeons, same thing, all right? Pigeon is just French for dove. A pigeon actually is a rock dove. It's in the same family. It's related to the beautiful mourning dove, the diamondback dove. It's actually related to the passenger pigeon, which became extinct because of us. The most numerous bird on the planet, billions of them, wiped out by us in about 100 years or so. It's actually related, interestingly, if you trace it down the family tree, it's actually related to the dodo bird, which was also wiped off the planet in about 60 years. So it is just a dove, but we have this prejudice about anything called pigeon is considered ugly. Anything called dove is beautiful. But, you know, Picasso wasn't painting doves. He was painting pigeons, and he named his daughter Paloma, which is just Spanish for pigeon, which is just French for dove. So it's all the same.
And it's rock because that's where they lay their nests.
That's where it comes from, actually. That's where they come from, in fact, too. They would lay their nests or make their nests on the cliffs, and they would forage for food inland. And they never abandoned their nests or their young, so they'd always learn to come back.
Hmm.
And that's how the homing ability came. And that's why you'll never see them homing and hanging out in trees, you know, nesting. They'll always be on ledges because it's just like the cliffs.
Well, let me just quickly reintroduce you. That's Andrew Bleckman, our guest today on Radio Times, and we're talking about his new book. It's called Pigeons, The Fascinating Saga of the World's Most Revered and Reviled Bird. Lines open at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Let's get Leslie from Germantown in on our conversation. Hi, Leslie. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, Marty. There. Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
Well, I'm changing my mind about pigeons. I never respected them too much. I just kind of tolerated them, you know, that kind of thing.
Yep.
But I'm growing to have a respect for them.
Okay.
My question is, thank you for writing the book, sir. My question is, ravens have been tested for their intelligence. And everyone knows that parrots are intelligent. Has anyone ever tested pigeons, how intelligent they are in the bird kingdom?
Well, I guess by testing their navigation skills and that sort of thing, that is part of the testing thing. So, I mean, they are very bright, just like ravens or crows are. You might even call them the dolphins of the sky in some ways. Mm. And, I mean, for the brain the size of a lima bean, they're extremely intelligent. And thank you very much for saying that about the book.
Yeah, Leslie, thanks for calling into Radio Times. And I guess, like human beings, there are different kinds of intelligences in the world.
Well, you got emotional IQ, you got your regular IQ, you got a lot of IQs.
All that stuff.
Yeah.
Thank you, Leslie, for calling into Radio Times. Well, let's talk about some of the pigeon eccentrics that you wrote about in this book as well.
Because there were many of them.
And it seemed to attract a certain kind of eccentric,
mm-hmm.
One that really jumps out at me, a fella called Dr. Pigeon, but he has a real name.
Melvin Murad Nagel,
Junior or something. McRae Nagel Junior. Tell us about Dr. Pigeon.
Well, he's just a very unusual character. He's Pennsylvania. He's out. I guess it's Stroudstown.
What is it about this state? But anyway,
I don't know why they slaughter birds here in particular. It strikes me as odd. But it just dedicated his life to nothing but pigeons, and he's actually considered. I went to a beauty pageant for pigeons
in Lancaster.
In Lancaster, actually, and not actually just like 50 miles away from where they were slaughtering them the next day, and literally like thousands of guys and their birds, and they were birds with corkscrew feathers, ones with feathers that went the wrong direction. One that actually from Transylvania that's called the naked neck, has no feathers around its neck; it's just bare skin, and he. He's a guy who lives, you know, I don't know, on 50 cents a week. So it's not a rich man's sport. It's not a rich man's sport.
Well, this is your description. Dr. Pigeon is a vegetarian, a practicing Buddhist who meditates an hour a day, lives in a dilapidated cabin with no heat or running water, and uses a chamber pot. When it's really cold, he wraps himself in aluminum foil, shiny side down, works best to stay warm. There was a time a few years ago when he lived on 50 cents a week, eating only spaghetti. He didn't have a working stove, so he soaked the dry noodles in cold water for several days until they got soft enough to eat.
Yeah, he told me that he was probably depressed. It's easy to caricature these folks, though, as all being a bunch of nutty eccentrics. Some of them are eccentrics. And let me first say that Dr. Pigeon was a really neat guy. I really enjoyed him. I actually enjoyed all the characters in his book. And if any of them come across as kooky in any malicious way, then I made a mistake because that was not my intention. There are just people who work with these birds, they're just the old-time hobbyists. The pre-TV, back when maybe family gathered around the radio after spending the day doing animal husbandry in the backyard. Wonderful, 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 and very knowledgeable people.
Well, there's another guy, Dave Roth, who is the head of and only member of the Urban Wildlife Society, and he lives in a house filled with pigeons.
Yeah, it's funny. Dave is probably the craziest sane person I ever met, or I'm not sure, maybe he's the sanest, craziest person I ever met. He's just like this nebbish guy, I almost expect to see him at like my Passover Seder or something like that. And yet you go inside, and really very bright, very well spoken, soft, sweet, gentle guy. You go inside his house though, and you break out into a sweat. It's filled with pigeon and pigeon droppings everywhere. I mean, like coated. It was, I quickly left again, and then I got the courage to go back in one more time to make sure I wasn't mistaken later in the day. But he's also, you're looking at a guy who is definitely an eccentric, but he's also saved tens of thousands of these birds' lives by dedicating his life to promoting humane pigeon control. He actually changed the way the city of Phoenix, the county of Maricopa, and the state of Arizona treat pigeons. And in terms of humane pigeon control. Because the fact is, poisoning them does not work. They just come back again.
And he is not a favorite among the neighbors in this neighborhood, right?
No. It's amazing the hatred out there. It's almost like the bird is like a foil. It's like a human foil. It brings out the best and the worst of us. And he has a neighbor. Here he is trying to, affect change across the whole state and the country. He's always involved all over the place. And his own neighbor, cuts up pigeons and leaves them on his doorstep.
Oof. Well, let's see, get some callers in on the conversation. Lines open at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. And today on the show, we are talking about, yes, pigeons with our guest, Andrew Bleckman. Let's get Laura from Narberth to join us this morning on Radio Times. Hello, Laura.
Hey, Marty.
I should say to our listeners, this is a friend of mine, Laura Jackson.
Yeah, how are you?
I'm good. How are you, Laura?
Good. I'm glad your producers talked you into doing this topic. It's fascinating. And
Thank you.
Have inherited from my great-grandfather this ornate silver pitcher that's inscribed, won by J. Carroll Kempton, January 1905, for the five best young carriers at Madison Square Garden, New York. And I've always wondered what the scene was, or if you could tell us a little bit about what he would have done or what would have been going on that he would have won this beautiful silver pitcher for.
Oh, that's great. And this goes back to 1905 in Madison
1905,
Square. 1905
in Madison Square Garden.
Pigeon fancying was considered just a very popular sport for a long time. It goes all the way back. Queen Elizabeth I was a huge pigeon fancier. And in fact, there's a pigeon that has the feathers that kind of go up the wrong way around its neck. It looks like a Marlene Dietrich photo.
Oh, wow.
And actually, if you look at Queen Elizabeth I, she has those huge, weird collars that are really stiff that go all the way up around her. She's just imitating, actually, her favorite pigeon, which is called a Jacobin. Well, I could probably tell you about your grandfather. One was he was probably a very gentle soul. He was probably extremely knowledgeable about his birds. And if he won, then he was extraordinarily competitive and knowledgeable. Not an easy thing to do. I met one guy who spent 13 years of his life, 13 years, just to try to put a different color into his breed of pigeon in the tail. That was it. It's a very difficult sport.
So this would be for a confirmation. It wouldn't be for racing or homing. It would be for
beauty pageant. It would probably be for the beauty pageant. Carrier pigeons are homers are actually made up of different breeds. It's like a super pigeon, and carrier is one of them. But they also show them for beauty and carrier pigeons. It's a British pigeon, and so it would have been for beauty.
Madison Square Garden, not bad, Laura.
Thank you.
Thanks for calling into Radio Times.
Bye-bye.
Let's get Larry from Cheltenham to join us. Larry, go ahead. You're on the air.
Do regular city pigeons have a built-in homing ability, or is it only specially bred?
No, it's all of them, actually. It's the specially bred ones have a more highly developed, which actually gets better with practice as well, and with genetic re-engineering, that kind of thing. But they all do it. It all goes way back to when they were cliff dwellers, that they're all able to go home. It'll take them longer to get back home, but they all do it.
Okay.
Thanks
for calling into Radio Times. I'm curious, too, about the role that pigeons have played in science, for instance. And you write about Charles Darwin,
yeah,
who was a big pigeon fancier.
That's a funny story about that one.
Well, go ahead. Yeah. Tell the story.
Well, it's funny. First of all, everyone talks about the finches, right? The finches this. There was 13 of
Galapagos.
Them. Galapagos, one on each island. They had slightly different beaks. Darwin really didn't pay any more attention to that. It took him 20 years to actually get up the courage to publish on the Origin of Species. And actually, when he went to his publisher, the first chapter was exclusively about pigeons. And it's a long chapter. And, most of us don't read it. We just know of it. So I went back and read it. I was stunned. Now, it was such a fancy hobby. There were so many fanciers in London at the time. The publisher told him, you know what? Why don't you just leave out that evolution stuff, and why don't we just expand on the pigeon topic because it's so popular. Darwin disagreed, and it was published, and it sold out within a week.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
But he actually used it. He used the pigeons. You can't see evolution happen, but you can see pigeons breed like bunnies, and you can see what happens over the generations of pigeons. Now, all those fancy, funny-looking pigeons I saw, at the time, it was believed that they all were like placed on the earth just as they are, although they were never found in the wild. Now, what he said is, I bet you if you breed them amongst each other, you'll end up with just like a park pigeon. And that's exactly what happened.
Huh, that's interesting. But did he raise pigeons, or he just was interested in, he observed them probably?
No, he raised them. And he became actually, I guess you could say, a bona fide pigeon fanatic.
Hmm.
Even Julius Reuters, interestingly, in history, was a pigeon guy. He was, the telegraph lines were being laid all across Europe in about 1850, 1851. Hmm. There was a gap between Brussels and Germany. And he filled that gap with pigeons because it was faster than trains at the time even. And he literally built his news empire on the backs of these birds. They would carry little mail bags underneath their wings with stock quotes and
with
stuff.
News stories or stock quotes, little information like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, it was a huge bottleneck for all the news of all of Europe.
And let me get to John from Brookline, New Jersey to join us. John, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Good morning, Marty.
Good morning.
Wonderful show.
Thank
wonderful
you.
Book. Congratulations.
Thank you.
I have a question. I was told that pigeon droppings cause disease in humans if they inhale them. Is this true?
That is, let me put it this way. First of all, it's not good to inhale anyone's droppings. Secondly, you would need an awful lot of them. That really is only the case when it's, first of all, they're not necessarily diseased, but things will grow in droppings that are just in the ground
sure.
or anywhere, like bacteria and viruses. Now, the one thing you don't want to do is you don't want to go in an attic that's enclosed and has tons of droppings and stir them up when they're dry, period. No, you definitely don't want to do that. But if you're just walking down the street or something like that, or if there's some on your ledge, you don't have any problems.
All right, John, thanks for calling into Radio Times. And you say in this book, for a while, droppings were considered
a precious commodity.
A precious commodity.
The ancient Egyptians used them as fertilizer because it's actually such a rich fertilizer, you have to watch out how much you use of it.
Hmm.
And then, the British crown, all droppings belong to the British crown because what they were able to do is they were able to get manufacture saltpeter out of it. They were able to separate that from the droppings. And saltpeter is a critical ingredient to gunpowder.
Hmm.
So, I'm not sure if Queen Elizabeth will take our droppings now, but I'm sure
but
a lot
in the past.
It'd be great, right?
And that's Andrew Bleckman, our guest today on Radio Times. We're going to take another short break and then get back to our conversation. We are talking about pigeons today on Radio Times, and that's the title of his new book, subtitled The Fascinating Saga of the World's Most Revered and Reviled Bird. Just a couple open lines at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
The University of Pennsylvania supports WHYY. Have you been treated for bipolar disorder or experienced a manic or mixed episode? If so, you may be eligible to participate in Penn's clinical study of an investigational medication for bipolar disorder. To learn more, 215-573-8582. Eligible participants may receive study-related medication, lab work, and evaluations. 215-573-8582. The University of Pennsylvania supports WHYY.
I'm Robin Young. Join us next time for the news and these stories here and now. Philadelphia struggles to contain homicides and guns. Also, what's really on the menu at many Thanksgiving gatherings? Old hurts, current secrets. That's Public Radio's Daily Digest of News and Culture here and now.
Today at noon on WHYY.
The Delaware Symphony Orchestra proudly supports WHYY. Maestro David Amato and cellist Lynn Harrell celebrate the 100th anniversary of the birth of Shostakovich with a performance of his first cello concerto on Friday, November 17th and Saturday, November 18th. The program includes Glinka's Overture to Ruslan and Ludmila and Rachmaninoff's Second Symphony. Tickets at 800-374-7263 or DelawareSymphony.org.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss Cohen, and if you're just joining us, Andrew Bleckman is our guest. We're talking about his new book. It's called Pigeons, and it's subtitled The Fascinating Saga of the World's Most Revered and Reviled Bird. And we're talking about all the contributions that pigeons have made to wartime efforts, to science, to journalism, and of course,
unparalleled history.
Unparalleled history, as he says. And also taking phone calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. I remember in my behavioral psychology classes learning about B.F. Skinner trying to teach and actually teaching pigeons to play a form of ping pong.
Yeah, he actually used ping. They learned to play ping pong with their wings, with the ball. I don't know how good it was. He did a lot of things with pigeons, actually. He tried to actually come up with the earliest form of a so-called laser-guided missile or whatever, using pigeons pecking on a screen to help you know, get to its target. But, you know, just like anything with pigeons, nobody took it seriously, and it was laughed out of the Pentagon. And, you know, it still happens. The hardest thing is for people to take this bird seriously.
Well, and you write in this book about environmental laws. I mean, there are a lot of laws that protect birds in this country.
Not pigeons.
But not pigeons. Yeah. I mean, do you think they need protection? Because it sounds like they have amazing survival skills in spite of all the things that are done to them.
Well, let me put it this way. You know, some people say we're God's children, you know, and I don't know why it is that the pigeon somehow, exempted from his kindness then. Do we need it? Yes, we do need it. Because any animal that's routinely poisoned, shocked with wires purposely, and people place caustic gels on their ledges that then burn through their feet and until, like, you know, literally their feet fall off. Yeah, it's cruelty. And I think at least there needs to be a cruelty statue out there. It's open season on pigeons. You can do just about anything you want to them. In Higgins, they put them on forks and lit them on fire.
This is in Higgins, Pennsylvania.
Yeah, just not so far away, right?
They're live, and they stick them on forks and put them in the fire?
Yeah, yeah. Not so nice. You know, just by comparison, interesting, one of my favorite stories is when I wrote a op-ed for the New York Times this summer about the pigeons in Trafalgar Square. They asked me to, and I got a call from an old pigeonier from World War II, and he called me, and, you know, I thought the guy was going to talk my ear off, you know, but he was a really neat guy, really neat old man, and he told me this story. He was part of the pigeoneers, and when they were, after the Battle of Bulge, they were then sent ahead into, you know, the German villages, and they were told, find the racing pigeons and kill them all. Now, this is a guy who grew up in Brooklyn, you know, immigrants, son of immigrants, that kind of thing, and his pigeoneer guys, which was actually a corpse, or whatever you call that,
a corps
in the military. Anyway, so what he came up with a different idea, and that is every bird has one feather, and it's called the flight on each wing. And what he did was he took that one feather on each bird, on one wing, and cut it in half, knowing that in 6 months it would grow back and that the war would be over.
Interesting. Let me get Elizabeth from Carversville to join us. Hi, Elizabeth. Go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi.
Hi there.
Many years ago. By the way, I wish my father were alive to read this book. My father had a stroke at a very early age, and he kind of lost most of his speech and a lot of movement on one side of his body. And as therapy, because he always liked nature and birds, we got him some pigeons to take care of. And his interest just expanded. He used to talk to them. His speech improved. His movement improved. They responded to him. And then he began to get really fancy ones, like fantail pigeons. Mm-hmm. Their tails stand out like a peacock.
Yep.
And it was just wonderful to see the relationship between this elderly gentleman And these pigeons, he just couldn't wait to get up in the morning and go out and take care of them.
Well,
and living out here in the country, there was actually like a pigeon farm. We used to buy the pigeons for him. And they really perked him up.
They make great pets, absolutely. They're very gentle creatures. They like us.
In fact, that's part of the problem that's been created because they enjoy our company.
Everywhere you find a human, you'll find a pigeon. In fact, they're on every continent in the world except for Antarctica.
Elizabeth, it sounds like you had a pretty smart family to figure out what your dad needed.
Well, they worked wonderfully for him.
That's great.
I have a picture of him with paralyzed on one side and a pigeon on his shoulder. So.
That's great.
It's very touching.
Yeah, thanks for the call, Elizabeth.
Okay.
Take care. Bye-bye. Mm-hmm. Let me get Catherine from Yardley to join us. Hi, Catherine. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I just happened to turn on the radio and heard your topic, and it made me think back to when I lived in New York City, and I was taking a summer class at Columbia University, and we were in an old building with no air conditioning, so the windows were open, and a couple of pigeons had nested on top of a filing cabinet in the classroom that we were in. And so every 20 minutes or so, the parents would come back to feed the young, and it would be very, very noisy and very disruptive. And instead of kicking the birds out of the classroom, Columbia moved us to a different classroom.
Wow. So they could have the room to themselves.
And I just thought that was, a little bit of a compassionate pigeon story.
Indeed.
Thanks, Catherine. That's exactly what I like to hear after studying this bird. If any animal in the animal kingdom deserves another look, it's the pigeon. It really deserves a second chance. I would urge America, let alone Philadelphia, to please give this bird another look, just like Columbia did.
And Catherine, thanks for calling into Radio Times. Let's get Dana from Newtown joining us this morning on Radio Time, another friend of mine calling into the show. Hello, Dana Cohen.
Does this say a lot about your friend?
I think it does, but go ahead.
I just had a question. Is there a number or someone to call if a pigeon happens to land in your backyard that has bands on its leg?
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, if you go to my website, I have links to all sorts of organizations. There's actually several racing organizations, and one's the AU, the American Union of Pigeon Racers, AURU or PU, whatever. Anyway, it's on my site, and you can definitely call them up. Although I have to tell you, the ones that have the bands that are lost, you know, it's kind of like it's the dirty little secret, but they really don't want them back because they're looking, you know, they're racers. They don't want to breed a bird that can't find its way. You know, kind of like Curious George's best friend is the pigeon named Compass and can't find its way anywhere. They really don't want them back. So I don't know what to say. I mean, those people would scream at me right now, but I would say just leave the bird alone and maybe feed it, make it a friend.
And see what happens. And if you go to Andrew Bleckman, BLECHMAN.com, there are links to all sorts of sites there.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dana.
Bye.
I'll see you. Bye.
Bye.
We've got Nick from Norton. Nick, go ahead. You're Radio Times.
Hi, Marty. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good, thanks. I just had a question for the author. I read an article in Scientific American a couple months ago about how the Earth's magnetic field actually flip-flops on a periodic basis, like every 20,000 years or so, and they're saying that we're pretty much in the middle of that happening right now, or they think that we're in the middle of that happening now. I was just wondering if your guest had any opinions on what that might do to pigeons or birds in general, their ability to navigate.
Well, I think it would certainly confuse them a bit, but I think it's funny. If you put little magnets on the back of their heads, they'll still find their way home, and that's been done by that gentleman in Cornell. Much more of a concern to these birds, or racers actually, are solar flares and sunspots, that kind of thing, which somehow disrupt the magnetic field much more commonly, and that will actually that'll send birds all over the place.
Wow.
They won't find their way home for a week.
Nick, thanks for calling into Radio Times. In the beginning of your book, you talk about living in New York, as you did for a while, and you decided to encourage pigeons to come and nest outside your window. But
actually, accidentally.
Accidentally. Well, there they were.
Yeah, you know, I just moved into the city, and I'd always been from the suburbs or small towns, and I just put a bird feeder out thinking, like, you know what, I need something. I mean, there's bars on the window. So, and it was nothing but pigeons that came out, and I actually thought they were kind of fun to watch. They make a fun cooing noise, and they're very gentle. But my landlord felt differently because the droppings were collecting at the front. You know, I was right over the front door, you know, several floors up. And he couldn't figure out where they were coming from. And one day, I used to write at home, he looked up and he saw my bird feeder. He literally bounded up the fire escape, just looked at me like I was a complete moron, and threw it at the road and just splattered everywhere.
Oh, living.
Urban living, right?
Let me get Rudy from Brown's Mills to join us. Hi, Rudy. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. True story I thought you might find interesting. A couple of years ago, I was working on a construction project. A contractor brought a crew in from out of state, put them up in a motel, and these guys would catch pigeons on the bridge during the daytime, bring them back to the motel. At night, when they got hungry, they'd catch a pigeon, wring its neck, pull its feathers, and put it on a hot plate. And they actually did this the entire time they were working on this project.
I think it's called foraging.
It was amazing when you saw what that room looked like when they left.
You know, I got to tell you, personally, I'm not sure this matters, but I don't have a real problem with people hunting if they're going to eat the animal at least. So, I mean, that's what they're doing, I guess, right?
And you've eaten pigeon?
Yeah, it's a great meat, actually. If you eat meat, it's a wonderful protein. It's actually... It's one of the tenderest meats out there. You'll find at the very best restaurants. They'll never call it pigeon. They'll call it squab, which is a baby pigeon. And it's so tender and clean as a meat that can actually be served rare, the only poultry that can be.
Called the milk-fed veal of the sky.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, it's kind of an unfortunate comparison.
Because
they're not treated as such. You know, they're actually treated somewhat humanely, I'd say. But, yeah, it's very, very tender.
And, Rudy, what did that room look like after the cooking on the hot plate?
Well, it wasn't the cooking, it was the droppings, and I can leave that to your imagination.
Okay. Fair enough. We keep coming back to droppings.
I like to separate my kitchen from the bathroom.
Exactly. Rudy, thanks for calling into Radio Times. Let's see what Sheila from Center City, Philadelphia has to say. Sheila, go ahead, you're on the air.
Oh, hello.
Hi.
Thanks
there.
For taking my call.
Sure.
I will make this fast. Perhaps you don't realize that the pigeon is also a great teacher. I remember I'm a senior citizen now, but when I was about 5 or 6, we went to my grandmother's house for Easter. And, of course, I was all dressed up in my Easter outfit and my Easter bonnet, and I was primping along the sidewalk outside under the trees. And a pigeon came by, and he dropped his droppings on my bonnet. And in a minute, he taught me the art of humility.
I wasn't sure where you were going with this story, Sheila. Thank you for calling into Radio Times.
I've been dropped on as well.
Yeah, I was going to say that happens to most people in urban environments. I appreciate you calling into Radio Times, Sheila. Thanks a lot. Let's get Linda from the Northeast to join us. Hi, Linda. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Amazing, fascinating topic, and your guest is very well read and, I guess, did a lot of research, and that's evident.
Well, thank
Number
you.
Number one, I'm wondering, has he written any other books in regard to any other animals or anything else to such a degree of research?
Actually, you know, it's interesting. This is my first book, and I'm just tickled pink to be on a show like this for the book. And I'm an animal person, but I wouldn't call myself, an advocate or anything like that. I tripped across this by accident. Like I said, I'm not even a bird person at all. I never even had an opinion about pigeons. But I do have another book coming out, but it's about a totally different topic. It's about
and what would that be?
It's about age-segregated housing, like Sun City's popping up all over the country where people just don't want children near them.
Ah. Okay, cool. My other, as a lifelong resident of Philadelphia, you're stirring up some serious concerns about the people in Pennsylvania.
Yes.
I noticed that you mentioned quite a few examples of people doing mean, cruel,
yes,
nasty things, mm-hmm, to pigeons, and I'm wondering if that's, also relevant to other animals as well, and what your experience is in other states, perhaps?
No one's as persecuted as this poor bird. I mean, it's just unbelievable how persecuted this bird is. I mean, squirrels are certainly nowhere near that. You know, I enjoy them all, though. I enjoy squirrels. I mean, people call them mutts, whatever. I like them. No, it's Pennsylvania, and you know, let me tell you this. I don't want to be an advocate, but there will be a bill coming across to the legislature to ban these shoots, and it's been banned almost everywhere else in the country. And it just it's so close to passage every time. The Humane Society is sponsoring it. It has like 30 co-signers or something like that. It just never seems to quite pass.
Well, and this pigeon shoot in Haggis, I guess that's the name.
Hagen
was stopped though by the Supreme Court because it was on public property.
You know, it's interesting. It was and it wasn't. Actually, the folks at Hagen didn't want the Supreme Court at the time said, you know what, this is a disgusting thing, and we're going to allow a humane officer, you know, to come and investigate it and possibly cite people. And the people were the sponsors of this competition of sorts were so angry at that they just canceled it.
Right.
So it was actually not made illegal.
And let's see if we can squeeze one more caller. We've got Eileen from Wynwood. Eileen, we're almost out of time, but go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Well, one day my husband brought home a pigeon with a badly injured wing. A trucker delivering to the USDA had found him and felt sorry for him, and we did too, so we got him all fixed up. The vet who took care of him was not sure he would ever be able to fly again. We spent many months trying to find his original owner or find another owner for him. All of this time, he had no interest in us at all. He spent all his time looking out the window. That's the only thing he did. And so finally, when it got to be the next spring, and we had determined from letting him fly around the house that he was able to fly, we let him out, and he was gone. We let him out one morning. He was gone the whole day. And late that day, he came back. And from that day on, he never sat pining out the window again. He had a complete change of heart and wanted me to be his mother.
They always
then when he wanted to sit under my bare foot most of his day.
They always come home. They always come home. That's why Mike Tyson's such a fan of them. You know,
as
a kid of the ghetto, he would. It was the only form of liberty or freedom that he saw was his birds flying freely above him on this rooftop, and they always came home to him.
Eileen, thanks for the call to Radio Times. And Andrew Blechman, thank you for joining us.
Oh, it's been great to be here. Thank you for having
me. You're welcome. And his book is called Pigeons, The Fascinating Saga of the World's Most Revered and Reviled Bird. And it's published by
Grove Atlantic.
And that's it for today's edition of Radio Times. Devorah Lissick, Alan Tu, and Susan Greenbaum are the producers of the program. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. You're listening to WHYY-FM Philadelphia, your member-supported news and information station serving Pennsylvania, New Jersey, and Delaware.